Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com. Woodhill Community Center. Have a hand in the heart of the city. Support their mission with your donations at woodhillcommunitycenter.org. Toyota in Nicholasville Superstore. Online consultants are standing by right now to help you find your next Toyota. Visit Toyota on nicholasville.com. Lexus of Lexington, home of the best-selling Lexus IS. Find yours today at lexusoflexington.com. Did you know that half of America is single? Hollywood has never produced anything like this before. The Dating Project, a groundbreaking documentary that follows five single people, ages 18 to 40, as they search for authentic and meaningful relationships. There is no script. There are no actors. These are real people trying to find love and happiness in an age of swiping left or right. From Empower Pictures, Paulus Productions, Family Theater Productions, and PureFlix, you can now own The Dating Project. Save the date by visiting thedatingprojectmovie.com and go a step further and help others in your circle date differently by partnering with Ascension Press. Visit shop.ascensionpress.com to acquire the companion study guide. The Dating Project movie is now available on DVD and digital download on Amazon, iTunes, and Walmart. Please visit thedatingprojectmovie.com for details.
Beneath the surface, and I believe I'm on the air. Am I right, Cindy, behind that glass? Fantabulous. Welcome. Glad you could join us tonight. we are here tonight and every Monday night between 10 and 11 o'clock, where truth, life, and love are one. Bring a little sanity into our age of insanity, a little life into our culture of death. We are podcast live through WCAP, as well as the TuneIn app. And we are also podcasted through Archive, Podbeam, Breadbox, iTunes, iHeart, and perhaps a slew of other things over the World Wide Web. My guest tonight on Beneath the Surface is, again, the man, the myth, the legend himself, Mr. Kent Niebuhr.
How are you, Paul?
Complain I can't, Kent.
2 weeks in a row. I don't believe I've ever done this before.
There should be a law against this.
There should be a law against it. They might come storming in here any minute now and drag me out of here.
Since there isn't, welcome to Beneath the Surface.
This lazy boy cozy chair that I'm reclining in right now is beginning to conform to my shape. So
that's right.
Got to get another guest in here pretty soon.
My producer, Cindy. Cindy, how you doing? How was your week?
It was good.
That's good to know.
Hi, Cindy.
How you doing?
Yeah.
Good to see you 2 weeks in a row.
What was that, Cindy?
Who let Kent in here?
That's a very good question.
I what happened was Paul opened the door and I snuck in behind him before it had a chance to close.
Yeah, I didn't know.
You're not
there.
Supposed to be here.
I see that. You're not supposed to be here.
Even she knows. If anybody knows,
so what's
she knows.
With you?
Yeah. I just show up and
so don't forget Cindy's Vinyl Vault. Right after the show, Cindy has her own music show with Peter. And they do a great job with oldies but greaties. That's what I call my own musical act, my solo act.
Greaties?
No, it's a little poem. It goes, I do 60s through 80s, oldies but greaties.
Oh, that rhymes.
Yes.
That is a little poem.
Yes.
Yeah.
Indeed.
It doesn't grate on your nerves, though.
By the way, I'm playing in Worcester. If anybody wants to come see me this coming Friday night.
My daughter is going to college in Worcester in 3 weeks.
At, what's the name of the place?
The college or where you're playing?
No, it's on Park Avenue, the Park Grill.
Sounds nice.
Yeah, from 6 to 9 p.m.
Sounds nice.
Yeah, always fun. That's where I wear my other hat, my music hat.
Do you have an entourage?
My what?
An entourage.
Oh, entourage.
Do you have an entourage? Who carries your stuff?
Well, that's what I have a wife for.
What?
Yeah. No, she doesn't carry the heavy stuff. I do.
Okay. All right.
She helps set up.
But she's your entourage.
Yeah, she is my entourage.
She's your support. She's your strength. She's your rock.
And then once in a while, people that I know show up, and, you could certainly do that if you wanted to.
Yeah, if I could get it into the schedule. Normally maintain. When are you playing again in Worcester at the Park Avenue Grill?
This Friday night.
I forgot what you called it.
This Friday night.
Is that the Park Avenue Grill?
Yeah, the Park
Friday
Grill.
Friday night? The Park Grill.
On Park Avenue.
On Park Avenue, the Park Grill.
You got it.
So six to nine.
Show up if you'd like.
Paul Morano.
Yep.
Sawing on that axe.
But anyway, tonight we delve beneath the surface on the topic of the head and the heart. Which is meant to lead? It's a great question. 978-454-4980 is our phone number. 978-454-4980 if you want to get involved in our conversation. We would love your 2 cents. Because that's about all Kent and I have is a couple of cents each as we delve into this interesting topic. You see it throughout literature, the history of literature. You see it in songs. You see it in movies. What exactly do we mean by the head and the heart? And, what is the dynamic between both and which is meant to lead? So I will start the conversation off like this, Mr. Kent.
Here I am.
And that is everybody. And I don't mean everybody. I mean every body, individual or social, has a head and a heart. The family body, well, actually the individual, the family, corporation, the organization, the nation, everything seems to have a head and a heart. An owner and a CEO, for example, a president and a vice president, the principal and the assistant principal, the captain and the first mate. The king and the queen, husband and wife, etc. It seems to be a natural part of everybody, like I said, whether it be individual or social, in order for it to maintain a certain structure that enables it to continue to exist. And as we talked about last week, we understand that metaphor that in marriage, at least according to sacred scripture, man is the head, woman is the body, and in Casti Canubi, which is an encyclical letter by Pope Pius XI, his metaphor was that man is the head and wife is the heart. And you can see the family then being the entire body. And so one question to begin this thought is, what does a head and a heart do? Let's take the individual body, all right? Let's take the individual human body, and then we can understand more family and social bodies. What does a head do, and what does a heart do? Well, a head seems to take care of the external, and it's meant to look outward, to lead the body, to protect it from all kinds of dangers, and to provide for it. So traditionally, we see the head as being the leader, the protector, and the provider. And if you look at a human head, that's what it does. It has eyes and it looks outward. And by the impulses of the brain, it moves the body according to what the head believes is the right direction. Well, then what does the heart do? If the head looks externally, the heart looks internally. And hence the heart, one of the roles of the heart, if you look at it, it is to nurture all of the tissues of the body with blood. It's to maintain the internal organs, to maintain the life, the internal life of the body, and to disperse that life-giving blood to all of the cells within that body. So you see different focuses. The head focuses, in a sense, outwardly for the sake of the body, and the heart focuses inwardly for the sake of the body. One leads, one nurtures. Both are absolutely necessary. Both are absolutely interdependent on each other. An obvious example, if you shoot the person in the heart, it's not going to be too long before the head dies. If you shoot the person in the head, it's not going to be too long before the heart stops beating and it dies. They are absolutely interdependent on each other, but one could say one is sort of the masculine life and the other is the feminine life. That's how I will provide the foundation for this head heart talk, Kent. Why don't you give me your thoughts right now and we'll go on with the conversation.
I guess I was thinking a lot of things while you were talking. And the last thing that I was thinking there when you brought up the masculine and the feminine, would you say that there's a distinction, an exclusivity between the head and the heart and the masculine and the feminine? Or is there an overlap?
Oh, there's definitely an overlap.
So there's definitely,
it's not 100% zero.
Right. Right.
It's so, like 60, 40, 70, 30, that kind of thing.
Yeah. It's close, but maybe one leans one way or the other.
Yeah, this is a leaning towards. And as a matter of fact, we're not even talking about the body per se. We're talking about the body in relationship to other things.
Yeah.
So in other words, a human woman takes on the masculine role when dealing with her children. Or if she is the supervisor of a company. She takes on that masculine role, and the others take on the feminine role.
So when you say that, you're talking about more like the rational or the strategizing, the logical planning.
Well, yeah,
deliberation type of thing.
Well, let's look a little closer into it, a little more beneath the surface about what head and heart does.
Yeah.
And this is where it gets a little iffy, because various people throughout history have used the metaphor of the head and the heart, or the mind and the heart, a little differently. Now, the mind usually is seen as that which reasons, analyzes, and sees, sort of like is far-sighted, in as much as sees the bigger picture, or at least attempts to. So it's able to lead the body. So it reasons and it analyzes, whereas the heart is seen as more the emotional and the intuitive.
And
it relates to passions. Here's the only question about the heart, though, and I want your take on it, too. Sometimes people see the heart as signifying the will.
Mm-hmm.
Other times people see the heart as signifying the emotions or the passions.
Yeah.
Or the intuitive part of our intellect. So
I say, why choose?
So
can't they both be?
Yeah. It all can be.
Right.
I think it would be part of what people consider the heart.
Yeah. I think when you're thinking of the will, you're thinking of what you desire, what you long for, what you want, right? And so much of that tends to be emotional, based upon sensory perception, based upon like feeling things, right? Now, of course, your brain, your mind, your deliberate intellect, you might say, also uses sensory perception to make decisions, right?
Well, the thing is, the intellect is supposed to inform the will.
Right. So this is what I was saying. This is what I was getting at.
Yeah.
Is that we can talk about having a disordered will, or we could talk about having a will that is not disordered, right? Because we even talked about this last week.
Good will, yeah.
My will could be compelling me to eat a bucket of ice cream, right? However, we would say that...
I'm not sure if you would use the word will or desire there.
And yes, okay, so what's the distinction
then?
That's
the great question. That's the question here. Is there a distinction between the will, one's will and one's desires?
Yeah, I think the will is looking for the perceived or expected satisfaction that comes with eating a bucket of ice cream.
However, I would say the will, at least if it's properly oriented, the will is actually looking for the good. Not necessarily the tasty or the exciting, but the good.
Yeah,
and that's where
the
intellect comes in to inform it.
Right. Like I might have a spoonful of ice cream and think, that is such a wonderful experience. I want to prolong that experience as long as possible. And I could prolong it a really long time if I eat the whole bucket of ice cream. Right?
You could.
So there's a certain...
Until you get sick.
Right. We might call that a rationalization, right? Because we're employing reason to serve our will.
Let's think about that for a second. And that's, I don't want to go too fast here because that's an important point. When we say the mind or the intellect is meant to inform the will so that the will chooses what is true and good, sometimes the intellect rationalizes and is not open to the truth, but rather is tugged towards the, let's say, the desirable rather than the good.
Yeah, right.
And I think that this is a movement rather of the will rather than the intellect.
Although,
because the will disables the intellect from being open to the truth.
It can.
Yeah.
However, what the will,
yeah,
or the heart, or the emotions, you could even say, informs the intellect.
Yes. It actually goes in a circle.
Yeah, so it's cyclical. It's sort of symbiotic, right?
Yes.
One thing benefits the other, and it continues in a circle, right? I think of take this as a physical analogy.
Mm.
If I put my hand on a hot stove, my nerve endings are going to alert my brain,
yep,
that I need to get my hand off of there. That,
right,
there's something wrong. It's purely physical sensory.
Yep.
But once my brain gets involved, which is, you know, an instant, a split second, then that sense of touch is informing my brain. And then my brain makes, well, in that case, more of an instinctive, reflexive decision to pull my hand away, right?
Yeah.
And one of the roles the emotion serves is to inform your brain, just like the nerve endings on my hand informed my brain, that something good is happening, something bad is happening, right? If I'm, I don't know, petting a furry kitten or something,
yeah,
those nerve endings are informing my brain that this is pleasant, this,
yeah,
is soft, this is good, you can keep doing this, right?
It is a good, yeah.
Whereas the hot stove is, those nerve endings are saying, this is bad, get away.
Right.
So the emotions serve a similar purpose, at least in one capacity. You get a sort of gut reaction to something, you get a sensation washes over you, and it tells your brain, something good is happening here, or something bad is happening here, or you might get a nervous feeling,
well,
like, I don't know if this is good or bad.
Let me delve into this gut reaction thing.
Let's go beneath the surface.
I tell you why I say that, because, oh, wow, is that the music already? Wow.
Wow, we talk too much.
One third of the show is complete?
Yeah, we're just blabbermouths.
I tell you why I ask about this gut reaction thing, because, you know, I don't know if it's gut reaction or if it's intuition or however else you want to verbalize it, but I don't have all that many of them in life, and I seem to have been surrounded by people who just know things without having to reason them out.
Wow.
I just know it. You know, I know what I'm supposed to do.
And how reliable is that? Are they generally correct?
I want to talk to you about that after the break, about what it means to have a gut reaction and how...
Do we have a phone number?
How much we should trust that gut reaction in ourselves?
Because some people out there might know.
978-454-4980. If you understand this notion of gut reaction and you want to weigh in on whether we should trust it or not, please give us a call here at Beneath the Surface Radio. 978-454-4980. We're talking tonight. Our main topic is the head and the heart. Which is meant to lead? We'll be right back. Paul Morano with Beneath the Surface. Don't go anywhere.
So let's join in just one last chorus. Visitors, staff, and guests.
There must be a reason for this song.
What? Shared won't be forgotten. Old friends are the best.
They're the best.
Joy, hands, and hearts, and voices, voices, hearts, and hands.
Oh, hearts and hell. Okay, there. I was waiting for it. 978-454-4980 is our phone number. You're listening to Beneath the Surface on WCAP Radio. We are here until 11 p.m., and then we serenade you with Cindy's Vinyl Vaults. All right, Kent, so before the break, we were talking about the distinction between what has historically and metaphorically been known as the head and the heart, or the mind and the heart. And there seems to be a correlation. And this has always been a mystery. Before I get into that mystery of gut reaction, I want to ask you this question. Because this is such a fundamental mystery to me. In how people use these terms.
I'd appreciate it if you gave me the questions before the show.
No way, Jose, because I don't even know them. Well, is there some kind of direct correlation between the physical head and heart, or brain and heart, and this this spiritual or metaphorical brain and heart that we speak of when we talk about the head and the heart here.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about that today, too, because I think the only reason why we tend to associate the brain with all of that,
yeah,
the intellect and so on, is because of the eyes. The brain is right behind the eyes, and we collect so much data from our eyes. And we'll even say to people, instead of saying, do you understand, we'll say, do you see? Right?
Oh,
do you see what I mean?
There's definitely a correlation between seeing and understanding.
Right? So yeah. I think there's something about the eyes being right there where the brain is that we associate that gathering of data, that understanding. Like, what is the symbol? What is the animal symbol going back thousands of years for wisdom?
Mm-hmm.
The owl. And because the owl has big eyes. If you look at Eastern Christian art, Byzantine art.
It's not because he's always asking who?
That's right.
Okay.
Right. If he was wise, he wouldn't have to ask. So if you look at Byzantine art.
You think he'd be asking why? Why?
Why? Why? Okay. Right. He's not all the right. Why animal. He's the who animal. So these big eyes, even in Eastern Christian art, if you see a person with big eyes, it's not because they actually had these, you know, really supersized eyes. It's because they're trying to demonstrate. It's what they call iconography. It's the symbolism of large eyes is someone who is very wise. They have deep understanding
of
things.
And you can see how that symbolizes somebody who's able to see the bigger picture.
Sure. Right.
Now obviously it doesn't literally correlate.
Yeah, exactly.
But,
and then the other thing with the heart is, like, you could see why the heart would be associated with emotions, because let's say, I don't know, somebody scares you. The first thing is your heart starts to race, right? When your heart broken, you actually physically feel physical pain in your heart. When someone breaks your heart, when you just want to die and you're just feeling lousy about, you know, a breakup or whatever, you physically feel your heart is hurting, right? So maybe there is some actual supernatural and physical connection, but maybe it's based on things like that.
I think it's both. I think it's both. Ever notice how throughout history the heart has symbolized love?
Yeah.
Okay.
Valentine's.
I wonder why. Well, love does have to do with the emotions and the will.
Yeah.
Both two levels of love. Ever notice how in religiosity, in Christianity, particularly the Catholic Church, the heart is symbolized as the Sacred Heart of Jesus and the Immaculate Heart of Mary are symbolized as the love that Jesus and Mary have for the human race.
Yep.
So
the heart is always a symbol of love. And
now, why is that? What does love do? Well, in a sense, love gives life. That's what love does.
It
gives self, it gives life. And isn't that what the physical heart does? It pumps blood in order to nurture and give life.
Yeah, everything breaks down without the heart pumping the blood.
Right. It's the life giver of the body.
Right.
So you can see how the heart would symbolize love.
Yeah, and think
and
about...
And it's red, too. Red is blood.
If your heart doesn't pump very well, I am not a medical professional at all, but people with circulation problems, their extremities are cold, right?
Mm.
And we'll talk about people who are emotionally cold.
That's very interesting.
Right?
Yeah.
So, so-and-so is cold-hearted.
Yes.
Right? And you can see when the heart is really strong and pumping blood, the whole body's warm.
Interesting. The heart. So you have cold-hearted people and hard-hearted people.
Hard-hearted.
Yeah.
So it's not flexible, right?
It's not pumping
that blood
properly.
Right, because it's too hard. Hearts of stone.
Gosh. There's definitely correlations here.
I think so.
You know, you in order to become a better person, you want to soften your heart, right? To various things.
Yeah, and think about things like "Be still, my beating heart," right? If you find yourself getting carried away, let's say with love. You'll say, "Be still, my beating heart," or, you know, that would at some point in history, that would be a typical phrase. But what's interesting there is it ties back into the intellect, because you're telling your heart to take it easy, to slow down, don't get carried away.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
That's what? The rational, the intellect, the will?
Well,
what is it?
The intellect or the mind is meant to seek and discern the truth, and then inform the will to act according to that truth.
Right.
So there's the correlation.
Right.
But tell me this, Kent, when it comes to verbiage, when it comes to the stuff, the heart's the physical heart has the same word as the spiritual heart. You know, you talk about the heart of the person.
Right.
But wait a minute. The physical head or the brain does not have the same word as the spiritual, because usually we use the word mind.
Mind or head.
Or head, and that would be the same.
Right.
But when you there is a distinction between the physical brain and the spiritual mind.
Right.
Like there's a distinction between the physical heart and the spiritual heart, but with the head, there are two words, brain and mind. With the heart, there's only one word,
it's
heart.
Just heart. Right.
Yeah,
right.
Now that's a difficulty linguistically.
However, let me throw this at you.
Yeah.
We will say something like, I feel it in my core.
And core means heart.
Right? Deep down. But the word core comes from the Latin word for heart, right? Like in Italian, the word for heart is cuore, right?
Yeah.
And we talk about like cardio.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It all comes from the word heart. So the word core means the heart of something, right?
So you feel it in your heart.
Yeah.
You know it in your mind.
You know, people will say, I know it in my heart, right?
Some people do.
You can say that too. But
can I say something about that, by the way?
Yes, please.
I think
it's your show, dude.
There is a there has been a movement in Western times, in Western world since the Enlightenment, to orient the self towards the mind rather than the heart.
Yeah, but you know, you read the Old Testament, and it's all about the core, the heart.
In biblical literature, in ancient times, in pre-modern times, very often you know something in your heart.
Right, they don't talk about the mind at all.
It's the heart of the person that symbolizes the person themselves.
Right.
Today, since the Enlightenment particularly, we have shifted that to the mind.
A dichotomy. It's the mind because of
our value of reason since the Enlightenment that is sort of now symbolizes the person.
But
it's their head, their mind.
I need to argue with that.
Yeah.
You said our value of reason since the Enlightenment. Now, the Enlightenment goes back as early as the 1400s, but really later, right? However, look at reason, how it was used before that. St. Thomas Aquinas is like an expert at reason.
He was the king of reason,
300 years before
that, right?
You go back to, you know, the pagans, Aristotle and Plato.
Outside of philosophers, though.
Right. Outside of philosophers, you still had, well, I was going to say Stoics, who were also philosophers.
Yeah, those
are philosophers. But the point is that reason and logic were fully in use. But what the Enlightenment did was split logic from the heart, right? In other words, when you have the two of them working together in this, you know, symbiosis, in this perfect complementarity, you have a healthy person, right? But then the Enlightenment, when you get to the Enlightenment, they start subjecting or actually making one inferior to the other.
Rationalism. Yeah.
Right. And so this is what opens the door for things like the Holocaust. Right?
Yeah.
When you start to take the heart out of things and only have some cold, hard facts and say, well, we could manage humanity better if we got rid of this kind of people.
Well, you could say that the mind without the heart is like knowledge without wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
And knowledge
it's data.
And information without wisdom is dangerous.
That's right.
It is definitely dangerous.
That's right.
Because you can use it to whatever selfish ends that you want. If you're not sincerely, genuinely love the truth.
Right.
And that's another, just think of what I just said.
Mm-hmm.
Love of truth.
Right.
Love has to do with the heart and truth the mind.
Yeah.
If you don't love truth, you're not seeking truth.
This is what the word philosophy means.
Yeah, love of truth.
Love of wisdom. Right. So, and this brings me to another point. The way you were presenting the show, you were saying which is supposed to lead, the heart or the mind. But I think you're setting up a false dichotomy. In some sense you could say, yes, your head has to, you know, take control of your heart. But we have the opposite corruption too, where people will say, you know, you're stuck in your head. You got to get out of your head, right?
Well, the thing is,
what is your gut telling you?
I think the problem here.
Yeah.
Is, well, first of all, there are two problems. Number one, when people are, like you were saying, too oriented to one, to the exclusion of the other.
Right.
Then you have a problem.
Yeah.
But the other problem is, even if the head seeks to lead, which the head seems to have a natural propensity to do, if it's not in consultation with the heart,
right,
then, like you said, you go in various strange directions.
Mm-hmm.
It always has to be in consultation to the heart, checking in with the heart to see,
okay,
to see, do you think,
yep,
this is X, Y, or Z?
But is that leadership? Is it meant to lead because of that? Because you could say, I think you could say the reverse as well. You could say the heart checks in with the head to say, okay, this is what I'm feeling, but does it make sense? Right?
Yeah, oh, no question. The heart definitely checks in. It has to check in with the
right
head to see if it's reasonable.
And so the head can say, this is what I'm thinking, but it just doesn't feel right.
In fact,
right?
I would say in our day, we have virtually the opposite problem of rationalism. We have a heart that is unbridled, that is not being checked in
with logic,
the head,
right,
with what is reasonable.
Facts.
We're just going with what is desirable,
right,
very often, and what is exciting, but not necessarily what is reasonable.
And we get ourselves into trouble, and we
huge
cause
trouble,
a lot of harm, and we...
Huge trouble.
Yeah.
978-454-4980 is our phone number. We're talking about the interplay between head and heart, and what that all means. 978-454-4980, listening to Beneath the Surface here on WCAP Radio.
So I think what we're saying is that when one dominates the other,
yes,
you have problems, whether it's the heart dominating the head or the head dominating the heart.
Yes.
That always goes wrong, right? So
yes,
it gets back to a word you started the show with or was in your introduction, this complementarity, right? This interplay, this give and take, this mutual consultation, right?
Yeah.
Between the two.
Now, and we also talked at the beginning of the show that every body has a head and a heart, whether it be an organizational body, a nation body, a corporation body, or a human body, or a family body.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you were to look at a human person, because that's the best analogy that we're all familiar with them. We're very familiar with the human body. When you look at the person, you're not looking at their chest. You're looking at their face.
Right.
Never noticed that?
Yeah, yeah.
It's the head that offers identity to the whole body.
Yeah.
Now, keep that in mind.
Sure.
It's the head that is the identity of the body.
Yeah.
When you take a picture, you don't take a picture of the feet or even the heart. You take a picture usually of the head.
Right.
And not
right,
the back of the head, the front of the head.
Yeah.
So the head provides identity. The heart provides life. I want you for a second to think about the distinction between identity and life, or form and life, as
mm-hmm,
philosophers would call it.
Yeah.
The soul is said to give the body both of those things. Both form, which identifies it, makes it this rather than that, and life, which of course is the opposite of death. I think there's something to be said here about the head being the form or the identity and the heart being the life.
Yeah, but you know what I'm thinking as you're saying all this? There's something that ties it all together. How often have we heard that the eyes are the window to the soul?
Yeah.
Right? If you want to read what someone's feeling, if you want to read what someone's thinking, you look them right in the eye. How expressive are the eyes of what we're thinking and feeling?
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So here's the thing. You said when you're looking at someone, you look at them in the face, right? But you don't look at their
eyes.
Right. You don't look at their nostrils. You don't look at their forehead or their chin or their mouth. You look them in the eye, or at least ideally.
Yeah.
You're looking them in the eyes because they're so expressive of both the head and the heart. That's what we're trying to communicate when my body and everything that it is that goes with it is communicating with you and yours.
Yeah, the whole person.
It all comes together in the eyes, doesn't it?
So the whole person, you could say, can be understood best through his eyes.
Right.
Which includes head and heart and body parts and everything else.
Yeah, and we usually expect someone's lying or at least hiding something if they can't look us in the eyes.
Right.
So we'll say, look me in the eyes and tell me what you were thinking or something.
Yes.
Right?
And putting that in perspective, you would say that the eyes express the entire person.
Yeah.
However, the eyes are in the head, and they are literally directly have connections to the brain, like you said earlier.
Yeah.
And so, in that respect, the head represents the identity of the whole person.
Yep.
The heart represents the life and the love of the whole person. And I think, and I want you to ponder this very politically incorrect thing that I'm about to say over the break.
Oh, boy. Cliffhanger.
And perhaps traditionally, this is why when two people get married, they take the last name, they share a name because they're now one life, they take the last name of the head, which is the man.
The identity. Based upon your argument that the head identifies the person.
Now it identifies the marriage.
Right.
They share that name.
The family.
The very name, the family.
Right.
978-454-4980. And by the way, you can see why radical feminists have a problem with that, and we'll get into that after the break. You are listening to us, Paul Morano and my guest today, Mr. Kent Niebuhr, Beneath the Surface radio show. We've got one more break, and then we'll be right back with you, so don't go away. The eyes of love. There you go. She's looking through the eyes of love when she looks at me. 978-454-4980 is our phone number. You're listening to Beneath the Surface. Paul Morano here with my guest this week, Mr. Kent Niebuhr. And we're talking about the mystery of the interplay between head and heart, or mind and heart. So, before the break and throughout the show, Kent, we've mentioned that the mind and the heart are of equal value. They are interdependent on each other. They should never seek to be dependent on each other, because that's when things get in trouble and start to break down and die. And whereas the mind or the head seeks to reason things out and to inform the will of what is true, the heart seeks to influence the head with emotion, intuition, and gut feeling. Now, I want to ask you, and I asked you this earlier, but we never got to it. What is your sense of what that means? What is gut feeling?
I think it's really feeling. I think it's...
What does that mean?
Emotion.
Emotions.
Emotions.
Happiness, sadness, that kind of thing. I think it's something else.
It could be. So you referred to intuition before.
Well, is gut feeling intuition? Is it the same thing?
Well, you know, sometimes you do physically feel something in your gut, right? Like you can be emotionally hurt so bad that it makes you like nauseous, right?
But that's not necessarily a feeling of the heart, is it?
Right, but what it's telling you is that there's something wrong. I mean, not that you need to know that, but it's a
sign.
Physical experience of an emotional problem. Right?
And that's what a gut feeling is.
I'm
feeling anxious. Mm-hmm. So my gut feeling is that this is wrong.
There's something wrong here.
I can't
put my finger on it.
Yeah, I can't put my finger on it. But
there's something wrong here.
So it has to do with an involuntary bodily reaction.
Sure, and then there are times where you're saying, you know, I don't like this.
Yeah.
But I can't explain why, right? I don't have the words. I don't have the vocabulary to put this into words. I can't put it into words, but I don't like this. And I think you know what I mean. I don't think I have to explain it to you. You know what I mean. This is wrong, right? Mm. If I have to explain it to you, you're already wrong, or something like that, right? So, but sometimes we're feeling something, and we just activate our mind, activate our reason, activate our will to a point that we just repress whatever we're feeling. No, I'm not going with that, right? Think of it this way. You really make me angry. You tick me off, and I'm like, I really want to, you know, throttle this guy.
Hmm.
But no, I'm not going to let myself go with that, right?
Sure. Yeah.
I need to stop myself from strangling Paul.
You govern your emotions.
Right.
According to what you believe is good and true.
Right. Or you'll repress what you're feeling in your gut because you want to avoid pain, right?
Yes.
You'll say, no, I'm going to cut myself off from that feeling because it's just too painful.
And that's a common thing for people who are starting to sort of what the culture calls fall in love with someone, but they don't want to.
They don't want to be hurt.
Because they don't want to be vulnerable again because they've been hurt in the past.
They've had that experience, yep.
And so they try to stave off their hearts.
Yeah, exactly.
Whereas there's other situations, similar but different, that you may be starting to fall for someone that you know in your mind is bad for you.
Yeah, right.
They would not be a good fit, mm-hmm. and yet all of your much of your lower nature is very attracted to that person.
Right.
So that's a situation where you hope your mind mm-hmm. overcomes and governs your heart according to what is true and good.
Right. Now, what about what we were just talking about before that? What about, you know, here's a perfectly acceptable person for you to fall in love with, but you're afraid, because this person is so wonderful, I'll be very vulnerable. Because this person is wonderful, I'll fall deeply in love with her, and then she can hurt me because of
that. Right.
So there's a case in which you're supposed to fall deeply in love with somebody. I mean, assuming you're not married
All things are right.
Right? Let's say there's nothing wrong with this person. There's nothing wrong with the circumstances and the situation.
And you are of a place in your life where you're ready to settle down and commit to somebody.
Exactly.
Okay.
But you had a past experience where you just fell head over heels for someone and you got burned, right?
Yeah.
So you're thinking, I'm just setting myself up again. So your brain takes over, and then you destroy love, or you destroy that potentiality of love with that person because you're thinking, I'm just afraid that it could go wrong.
And I think this is where reason needs to take over. Reason needs to say, I fear love, but it could be for the good that I follow it.
Yeah, so what you have is conflicting emotions. You have the emotion of, I'm crazy about this person, but then you have the emotion of, I don't want to get hurt, right?
Yeah.
You're experiencing through your memory the pain, the emotional pain of having loved and lost, right? So now it's this triad where you have these conflicting emotions, and that's where the intellect has to come in and say, well, let's look at the circumstances.
It has to take over.
What's the right thing to do?
Exactly.
And weigh all the facts.
What is the reasonable and right thing to do?
Right.
And, you know, sometimes, you know, you might even get hurt again. But still, it was the reasonable thing to try.
But you can't love unless you're willing to be, to risk that, right?
Right.
So now I want to double back and talk about something else. We were talking about the identity and the eyes and how we associate vision and sight with wisdom, which is generally associated with the intellect. But I would say the difference between being smart, having a strong intellect, and being wise is the marriage of the intellect to the heart.
Yeah.
That's wisdom, right? And I would also say the eyes are associated with wisdom. And think about, we will say to someone, do you see what I mean? Meaning,
We're talking about understanding what the eyes see,
but we're really talking about understanding, which is the
mind,
intellect.
The mind seeing.
Right. But think about this, too.
Mm.
The eyes cry.
Yes.
Tears are not intellectual.
No.
Right? Tears are a physical manifestation of what you're feeling in your heart or even your gut, you could say.
Well, like you said earlier, the eyes express the whole gamut of emotions.
Exactly. Not just the whole gamut of emotions, but they also, you can tell not just what someone's feeling by looking into their eyes. You can tell what they're thinking, or, you know, you're getting clues. I shouldn't say you can tell, like mind reading, but you're getting clues about what someone's feeling. You're getting clues about what someone's thinking.
Could we make a generalization here, then, that the mind takes in what the eyes see from the outside, whereas the heart expresses what is inside through the eyes.
Yeah, but so does the intellect, I think. What you're thinking is expressed through the eyes as well.
Not as much.
I think you can tell by what people's eyes are doing, what they're thinking.
When I'm thinking, people don't know what I'm thinking
about. Put it to you this way.
Unless you're a mind reader.
Okay, that's why I clarified it, I corrected myself, and I said you're getting clues, right, to what they're thinking by what their eyes are doing, right? If someone's eyes get really wide, they're objecting to what you're saying, or they don't like what you're saying, right? There's something they're rejecting about what you're saying,
but
right?
But still, that's more an emotion. That's
I don't
not,
know if
that's
it's
not
more
the,
an emotion. That could be intellectual,
that's
too.
That's not necessarily the content of what you're thinking.
You could be saying,
like,
what you're saying
I could
is
say,
so wrong.
I know that you're having a reaction to what I'm saying now.
Yeah.
That's a sort of an emotional reaction. You can't really say, and I understand exactly what you're thinking right now.
Mm-hmm.
By looking at your eyes. At least it's not as easy.
You can't say, I understand exactly what you're thinking, but you're saying, it looks
yeah.
like this is what you're thinking based upon what your eyes are telling me.
So
right?
you're trying to assess through the emotional reaction.
Right.
All right.
Now, I also wanted to get back to this, because I know we're getting pretty close to the show, and
yeah.
I wanted to make sure I say this. There's this implication in the way you pose the question, which is supposed to lead, that one is supposed to lead the other, and you were talking about the head and the masculine and how that has to sort of lead the heart, right? But think about this expression.
Okay.
And tell me if you think there's any truth to it. Behind every great man is a great woman.
Of course.
Right?
Yeah.
So, can man, who's sort of historically, traditionally associated mm. with the head, and woman associated with the heart,
yeah.
can you have a great head without a great heart? And in that case, what
we already
we're
talked
seeing,
about that,
what,
Kent.
Yeah,
we talked about that earlier.
But what that
you
expression
can't.
Implies
yeah.
is that you can't be a great man without a great woman.
We know that already. Right? We already talked that both head and heart are interdependent on
so
each other.
So then which is leading then?
The head.
That's my point.
The head.
What I'm saying is if a great head follows from a great heart, then isn't it the heart that's leading, and therefore in that sense, isn't it the woman that leads, because the man cannot be great without the woman?
Well, just the very phrase.
Yeah.
You behind every great man is a great woman. What's the focus of the phrase? The focus of the phrase is the man.
The man is sort of the face of that.
Precisely. The identity of the body.
Right.
So without a great woman, without a great heart, you will not have a great head leading that body.
Right. But he is following
informs
him with.
I would say that the heart inspires him.
That's probably
the best word.
That's good.
Yeah.
yeah that's
Whereas
good.
Whereas the heart inspires and the head informs.
Okay. Think of, maybe you can't think of this, but Julius Caesar. In Shakespeare's Julius Caesar, he's determined, he's bound and determined that he's going to the Senate House that day. And his wife is saying, don't
yeah,
do this.
Right.
Don't do this. Don't do
I
this.
I have a gut reaction. Yeah.
I have a gut feeling.
I tell you what I do.
I had a dream.
I would listen to my wife.
Right. So he goes to the Senate and he's dead.
Yeah.
Right. So is that a great man? That's a stupid man.
That's a stupid man.
Right?
Yeah.
Because he didn't listen to his heart, meaning his wife.
Well, yeah, I mean, at least discern.
Can I also interject that I'm a very stupid man?
Let me just say that the head needs to discern the hearts, all right?
Yeah.
Not always listen to, because remember the original sin. What did
right.
God, wait, be quiet for a second.
Sorry.
What did God say to Adam? Because you listen to your wife,
yeah.
X, Y, and Z,
sure.
right?
Right.
All right, so wait.
Go ahead.
Relax for a second, Kent. So what I'm trying to say is that the head has an obligation, you could say,
right.
to discern what the heart is saying.
Yeah.
But the head has to ultimately make that ultimate decision whether the heart has a good point or not.
Yes.
All right.
But I would also say that you can't have the head rule the heart, and you can't have the heart rule the head.
It depends on what you mean by rule. If you mean dominate, yes.
That's right. Dominating is wrong.
Yeah, I think it was Pius XI that actually did use the word rule when it came to the head.
Okay.
Yeah. And
So then a wise ruler
he said something
listens
like,
to his heart.
Well, you could say that, yeah. A wise ruler always has access to the heart,
right.
but he still rules.
Right.
You don't want to say that he doesn't rule.
Yeah.
Can I just say something? We only have about 3 minutes
Go
left.
Ahead.
There has been, and this sort of takes the conversation in a different direction, but it's fascinating. We could do a whole show on this.
Yeah.
There is now talk about having a human head transplant. Now, it has, right now it's science fiction, but there is talk about the possibility of it working. It has worked on a chimpanzee and I think a couple of rats. So it actually has worked for a number of hours they were alive after a head transplant. There is a somebody who is an invalid in Russia right now, whose body doesn't work from the neck down, seeking a head transplant, and there's this Russian doctor who wants to do it. I think there are legalities involved in all this, but to sever the head and to place it on somebody else's body. Now, as far as we know right now, this is impossible, but we thought heart transplants were impossible 70 years ago. Question is, Kent, let me get your opinion, because nobody knows the answer. If somebody's head was infused surgically on a person, say a person just got into a car accident, he's brain dead, into a healthy body that was kept alive by a machine, and theoretically, if the operation was a success, who would wake up? Would it be the identity of the head or the person of the body?
Paul, I'm going to go with my gut here. My gut is telling me it would be a new person, a third person.
A third option.
Yeah.
It would be a brand new person.
I can't explain that. I can't demonstrate it, but that's my sense. That's what my gut is telling me. That would be an entirely new person.
Interesting. Any reason? Now that your gut said that, can your mind reason that out a little bit?
I just think that the body is so unique to the head, and the head so unique to the body, that if you interchange them, it's going to be entirely new.
However, you can interchange many things of the body, like the heart, the kidneys, the spleen.
Right.
You can have blood transfusions, skin transfusions. You can have people now have different hands, face transplants.
Yep.
Suppose you have all those things.
Yeah.
Who wakes up from those 100 operations? Isn't it still the same person?
I don't know.
What do you mean you don't know? If somebody has a heart transplant, is it the same person?
Heart transplant. Right. Yeah, right. But there are anecdotal stories about weird things that happen in these scenarios,
That's another question,
right,
which we don't have time for.
So that's why I think, there you go. There's concrete evidence of why I think you'd have a third person.
Third person, not just a person with a new body or a person
it's
with a new,
person
a new head.
It's not person A or B. It's not the head person or the body person.
Person C.
It's right.
All right. On that note, on that very strange but interesting note, we will have to say goodnight.
Good night.
But thank you, Mr. Kent Niebuhr, for you're always a great guest. Thank you, Cindy.
Thanks.
Stay tuned for Cindy's Vinyl Vault. You've been listening to Beneath the Surface. I'm Paul Morano. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love.